Alex Gimark joins us in studio. How are you?
Good afternoon, Super Dave.
Now, you are running for the Chugach Board. You're currently a member of the Chugach Board, and you want to do that again. I got to ask, why the heck would anyone want to be on the Chugach Board?
Apparently, it doesn't have anything to do with pain avoidance.
No, that to me, I've watched assembly meetings, and I thought, well, that is a dry topic. But there's a lot of exciting things going on with South Central and Rail Belt Energy right now. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
We are in the midst of making a transition from primary reliance on Cook Inlet natural gas to primary reliance on something else. We figure we've got about 10 years to make that change. What else is down there? Susitna Hydro may be down there.
Mm-hmm.
Different types of generation may be down there. There's a geothermal plant being looked at near Mount Spur as something. There are people who think that Siri believes that they can bring a small wind farm online. We are in the midst of building a new generation plant near International Airport that will be more efficient than the old plant.
Now, where would that be? Is it across the way or is it out by the airport?
It's right next to Chugach headquarters on the east side of Minnesota.
Yeah, just across Minnesota, right there on the other side. Okay,
kind of in that corner.
Now when you say hydro, pardon my ignorance, but...
It's a dam.
It's a dam.
And it would be way up the one of the Montana Creek arms.
And that would provide energy to what part of the rail belt?
The entire rail belt.
Really?
And if we size it properly, perhaps half of our needs.
Really?
Yes.
And how long has this project been in the works?
Susitna came alive in the early to mid 80s. They made it too big. The economy crashed, and they spent about $120 million on studies, and it was shelved. That time has risen again. We got started the work to dust off those studies, downsize the project to something that would be reasonable
mm-hmm.
and fit part of our needs, and it's one of the long lead time things that we need to look at doing.
522-0750, 888-909-7750. We're joined in studio by Alex Gimark. He's running for the re-election for the Chugach Board. The rail belt consolidation process. I come from Nebraska originally, and there's one electrical company, Nebraska
Correct.
Public Power District. From end to end, you ever been to Nebraska, Melissa?
Oh, no.
No? It's a magical place. I highly recommend it.
Is it?
Did you ever fly out of there? Because you're
no.
a former fighter pilot.
Yes.
You were never stationed at Offutt?
Nope.
Never had the privilege of landing in God's Flatland?
My God's Flatland was West Texas.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I won't hold that against you. But...
I got a brother-in-law in
Everybody's got a brother-in-law in Nebraska. Everybody does. But what is the rail belt utility consolidation? I hear that they're working on this in Juneau. What is that exactly?
It's one of the things we've been working on for about 18 months, 2 years.
And the Chugach Board has kind of taken lead on this.
We've been at the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of falls out of money. Everything we do falls out of money. We've got six utilities in the rail belt. No single utility has the ability to borrow sufficient money to put new transmission and new generation in place 10, 15 years down the road when we need it. If we pool all our resources, create a generation and transmission corporation that's served on a board of directors that represents all of the utilities plus the state at the table as a banker, we believe we can get float enough loans to bond for
mm-hmm.
what we need to build out there. I think collectively or individually we can borrow $1 to $1.5 billion. Collectively, that number gets up in the $5 to $7 billion.
And then you can start doing some real upgrades, some real new energy generation
yes.
projects.
Yeah.
And you're talking that kind of money.
We've got to get off of Cook Inlet natural gas because it looks like it's going to be pretty skosh here about 2014 or so.
When we come back after the break, I want to ask your opinion of importing LNG and some of the other energy generation challenges facing South Central Alaska. We're in studio with Melissa Nolte and Alex Gimark. Kids, don't go away. We'll be right back. Your grasp of biometrics is amazing. 522-0750. I'm joined in studio by Melissa Nolte and Alex Gimark. So, Alex, We got a lot of coal in the state of Alaska.
Yes, we do.
I mean, we got a lot of coal.
We are the Saudi Arabia.
And I forget the gentleman's name, but there's a guy that lives up around the Fairbanks area, and he is like the coal guy. Whenever I have a coal question, and I hope he's listening, he calls, because he is as pro-coal as you can get.
Right.
Now, currently, the Chugach Electric is using what for power generation?
90% natural gas and about 10% hydro.
So 10% hydro right now.
Right.
Other utilities, who's the big, is there a big coal user?
The only coal plant I know of in the state is Healy Clean Coal, and it hasn't been operational. Golden Valley and another utility in the state have been in an extended food fight for the last 10 years with that bad boy.
And so we have zero power provided by something that we have tons of.
It's an interesting number. Lower 48, half the energy generation, electrical generation, is done by coal. 20% in the lower 48 is done by nuclear. It occurs to me if they can do it down there, we can probably look similar things up here. Unfortunately, for coal, that depends on the feds. And cap and trade sitting in Congress waiting to be passed or deemed passed.
By the way, just so you know, we don't have to vote on laws anymore. We just have to deem it so, and it shall be.
Let it be.
I know.
Let it be so.
Maybe you didn't get the memo. I'm just letting you know right now. Monday morning when you wake up, you're going to be mad and you won't know why. It's because we no longer have to vote on laws to make them laws. Elections have come. You got nothing, right?
Oh, yeah.
You got to be as dumbfounded as...
Well, no, it is absolutely amazing and infuriating, and we'll end up doing something about it.
Well, see, I'm from the Midwest, and I know that there are lines of coal cars on rail that I would drive, you know, in my drive to and from college, like once or twice a quarter. The coal cars would go through town, and they're full of coal.
There's a gentleman in town named Dick Peterson who. Is hooked up with a company called Alaska Natural Gas or Alaska Coal Liquid Corporation, and his big dream is to place a coal to liquids plant over in the Tyonek area, work the Beluga coal field, produce synthetic diesel, and such a plant would also have excess thermal energy that you could use to generate maybe a third of what the rail belt needs for electricity. It's basically a big refinery for coal. You get a lot of carbon dioxide out of it in the rail belt or in Cook Inlet. We've got a lot of depleted natural gas reservoirs. You recover and sequester.
You inject that down into the ground and source the gas out.
So no emissions. So it's a thing that has been discussed here locally for several years, and hopefully there'll be some movement on it. Synthetic diesel is a neat molecule. It ends up being the same thing as kerosene. It's also avgas or Jet A, and it's also JP.
Well, and there is really a big supply problem for Jet A at the airport.
Yes, sir.
There is basically the refineries in Alaska are at maximum capacity,
right,
for all intents and purposes. Any uptick in international travel through the airport has a fuel supply problem. I think one of the carriers or companies out there has a tanker come up to Kenai once a month with nothing but Jet A, to make sure that they continue to operate.
The process, the Fischer-Tropsch process, was something that the Germans did in the latter stages of War II. We got their scientists, like we did with the NASA scientists, brought a lot of that stuff over to the U.S. and had those sorts of plants operating through mid-50s or so until the big oil discoveries happened in the Mideast, at which place we turned those off and went to oil and natural gas.
522-0750, 888-90-9750. Back to the rail belt utility. What do you call that? Gretzky.
Greater Rail Belt Energy and Transmission Corporation.
Now, where are we at? I don't know if you heard the first hour. Oh, it was magical, let me tell you. It was radio. It was radio infamy is what that was, the first hour. But one of the things... Wasn't that good?
You're so weird.
All right. One of the things that people have complained about is about this legislative session, it doesn't appear that we're doing a whole lot of anything. This could be an exception to that statement. Where are we at on that legislative process?
As of yesterday, talking to our board chairman, who is down in Juneau furiously answering questions, I believe it is that legislation is out of the Senate, and it is in front of the House Energy Committee, who are asking some pretty pointed questions, and that's as it should be with the legislature.
So if it was to be moved ahead then by that committee and voted on by the House?
Once it gets voted on by the House, it hits the governor's desk, and we expect he will sign it.
Then what happens?
Then we start doing some planning. There will be a few million dollars attached to it. There will be a financial management plan prepared, an operations plan prepared, a strategic plan. Here's what we want to do down the road. The other things that we need to do fairly quickly is renew our integration standards throughout the rail belt so that they will include wind, which is very difficult to integrate into an island system like we have. We're going to have to look at it. GRESI will look at gas storage, and if they don't, the utilities will have to, because gas storage is in our future, and they're going to have to look at importing liquid natural gas into the inlet.
Importing liquid natural gas?
Yep.
Where would we get that from?
Don't know. Prices are down the road are unknown also.
And that's when you buy natural gas on something like that, there's a contractual duration that you agree into, 10 years, 20 years?
The ones that we're signing right now at Chugach are 2 to 4 years.
2 to 4 years. So yeah. You can get something relatively short-term until this magical, mystical bullet line, rail line, Aegea line, Denali line.
We will have to get something. And the numbers for those costs are all over the place. There are people talking in terms of $2 shale gas down in the lower 48. There are people, our current contract for, or our the latest contract we signed for natural gas averages between mid $5 to the mid $7. Mm-hmm. It's kind of that range. Liquid natural gas is currently being imported into Tokyo at $11. $11 was also the cost that NSTAR was wanting to pay a year and a half ago when we had that terrible spike in natural gas prices. So it's real volatile. It'll move around a while, and God only knows what it'll be in 4 years. But we don't think we've got a choice. We've got to address it now.
Wow. And any gas pipeline, depending on what route you go, and I don't know much about the bullet line. I don't expect you to either. I don't think there is a bullet line plan. Except, hey, let's build a bullet line.
The magic number on a bullet line is about 7 years from pull the trigger to first gas delivered. And the lowest number I've heard for Cook Inlet gas is $25, which is about double what they're delivering LNG into Tokyo for. That number, once again, slides around, and it may very well be different. This is just the last I've heard.
Alex Gimmard, he is running for the Chugach Electric Board. We're also joined in studio by Melissa Nolte. We'll be back with your calls and questions after the break. Don't go away. 522-0750. Straight to the phones we go. Ron, you have a question for Alex Gimmard. Go ahead.
Yes, I do. Alex, you sound like you're the right man for the job. And I visited Norway for 17 days this past fall to learn as much as I could about as much as I could regarding the country. And one thing I found out, other than them being the last remaining totally socialist country in the world, their homes and businesses are electrified and lighted, heated and lighted by electricity. Their method of generation, power generation, is by putting streams in pipelines, alpen streams, alpen lakes, not unlike Chugach power plant up on the old Seward Highway, which since 1954.
Talking the Klutna one?
The Klutna, yes, has produced and just performed wonderfully. And I wonder if there are possibilities to go that route, because you know how unpopular dams are going to be, especially Susitna. And we fought that numerous years ago when they set up the fund and studied it and then dropped it. And any ideas about that?
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah, thank you very much. Susitna, I'm a fly fisherman. As I understand, the place they're looking at Susitna sits well above where all the fish spawn. You get a lake up in that part of the Mat-Su or north of the Mat-Su. It occurs to me that would be a marvelous place for lake trout and grayling fishing. And I'd like to take a fly rod up there and do it. So I'm kind of selfish that way. There's another area directly across Cook Inlet called Chacachana. It's a lake that was created by a slide out of Mount Spur. There are some people looking at doing a tap on the side of that lake and bringing the water through a set of turbines. Problem with that is all five species of salmon go into the lake, and it'll take, my best guess, a good 5 years for Fish and Game to get around to getting all the studies done. And then once they do that, we get into mediation and fighting with the greens, and God only knows what else.
We'll get to the greens in a minute. I want to talk with you a little bit about your upcoming race. Jerry's been holding for a while. Jerry, my friend, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, sir.
Hey, what I'd like to throw into this discussion, and I did talk to Dan Fagan a week ago about it when he had a couple of people discussing, is we seem to be thinking that natural gas can be used to produce heat for homes and or generate electricity. Is that not the common thought for it?
Well, I know that there's, like, you can, isn't it a building block of plastics or something like that? Or
Exactly. Oil and natural gas are the two major components to produce plastic. Now, Alaska, for the most part, ships or sends almost all of our natural resources out to some other manufacturing site and buys back a finished product and pays a tremendous cost for freight and getting things back here. Why would it not be some thinking go into, perhaps, establishing a manufacturing plant that would build plastic and ship to other parts? It would take some marketing, but it isn't an idea that is so far-fetched that it wouldn't happen when we have two of the major components to produce plastic.
I would just say, and I'll let Alex feel this too, the permitting nightmare of building a petrochemical plant in Alaska with the EPA and... That's just my quick answer. Completely ignorant on the subject. What's your take, Alex?
Thank you.
Sooner or later, we're going to have to bell the EPA cat as a state and do something serious about EPA, and that may mean spending hundreds of millions of dollars in court. But we're going to have to do it. Otherwise, we're going to be in a big natural park. I would tend to stay away from natural gas, at least from Cook Inlet, because of the shortage. If you want to make plastics and other products, one way to do it would be to do a coal to liquids plant and mine the coal, take it apart into its component parts, and then make synthetic diesel. And once you take it apart, you can make anything hydrochemical out of it or petrochemical out of it that you want to.
When you say shortage of natural gas at Cook Inlet, I've been to a few of these luncheons where you have raw chicken and you got a bunch of people from like Marathon or NSTAR talking about gas and Cook Inlet. I hear the state say that there's plenty of gas in Cook Inlet. I hear some of the producers say there's plenty of hard to get gas in Cook Inlet, and the storage factor comes up a lot. What role is storage when we talk about getting more gas, if there is any, out of Cook Inlet?
Anything we're going to do in the future will require storage. If for no other reason than on cold days or when it's really, really dark, we get peak demands for natural gas usage. Contracts are written in such a way that you pay a lot more for usage above a certain level than you would in your normal range. So in order to control that peaking, you need storage. And if you are in the midst of running out or having harder to find or poor performing wells, then it makes good sense to start storing large quantities of natural gas against the time that those wells surprise you. And they will surprise you, and they normally don't surprise you by producing more.
Alex, you're running, you're currently an incumbent on the Chugach Electric Board.
Running with my good friend P.J. Hill.
P.J. Hill.
Who's an old economics prof at UAA.
Chugach just recently went through and renewed a two-year labor agreement with the IBEW.
We got three contracts signed and approved last month.
Now, how did you do that? There was no rioting in the streets. There was no cries and lamentations. How were you able to do that?
We put the right management team in place. We held everybody's foot to the fire, and people on both sides of the fence acted like adults for once.
So
it worked fairly well.
Yeah, because it is well below the radar. No, nobody, there was no acrimony. I'm sure there was, but it's certainly not to the level that one expects when one has labor negotiations.
You get the right group in charge, you'll get reasonable performance.
So it's the ballots come out.
Ballots should be in the mail on the 29th. There are two incumbents, PJ and myself, running, and a pair of very nice ladies, Ricky Liebman and Susan Reeves, running. Both of those ladies have other interests.
Well, if the labor contracts are kind of put to bed, which they are for extended period of time,
for three years. However, folks elected, it's a three-year cycle. So the folks elected this time will get to vote on the renewal of those contracts before they leave the board.
But nobody's going to run on 3 years from now,
no.
I'm going to take care of you guys. What is, in the candidate forums that you've attended...
And there's only been one of them.
So far, what is that issue? What's the, this is where we're different, or this is their hot-button topic?
We're probably too early, but it looks like the other side appears to think the way to make it through an energy shortage is by conservation and efficiency. While we certainly support that, you can't grow an economy from a point of shortage and scarcity. Our job is to find sufficient fuel and bring just as much. Let me put it another way: if I can bring 1,000 megawatts of 2 cents per kilowatt electricity online and do it affordably, the rail belt's problem with electricity goes away, and it goes away for generations. So I figure, you know, there's only so many brain cells in the world,
mm-hmm.
and I figure the more of them you spend on trying to do your job and bring the new stuff online as quickly and as reasonably as you can, and the less you do in making, playing with things that the marketplace best does, you're going to be a lot better off.
Well, from a commercial sector, if conservation means a restaurant owner, well, you know, you're just going to need to shut down a little earlier when it's cold, or you're going to have to be closed a day so your demand goes down. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's basically it. And here's a fun story. Juno, about 2 years ago, had a electrical outage. Juno was supplied 100% by renewable electricity out of a hydroelectric dam. Avalanche cut the power line. Juno for 3 to 5 weeks was on diesel power. Their electric rates spiked by a factor of 5. They got about a 30% conservation. So when things, conservation is a very inelastic,
mm-hmm.
inelastic number. And yeah, it feels good to do, and it feels good to say. And we at Chugach we've got a conservation program that has slowly cut our electrical sales about 1% a year over the last 3 years. It's all voluntary. We're just getting a little smarter. You do things slowly and reasonably, we can get from here to there. And it's certainly something expected from the legislature.
And this is coming from a Ford or fighter jock.
Yeah.
I mean, slow and reasonable is certainly not the hallmark of a fighter pilot. That's got to go against your innate nature quite a bit, doesn't it?
I was an old A-10 guy, so we had armor plating on the aft end of the wings for bird strikes.
Well, how can people get a hold of you if they want to find out more about you and PJ? What do you guys got going on?
We've got a Facebook group up. Just do a search for Alex Dimark and PJ Hill for Chugach 2010, and it'll take you to the page. It's under construction, as they all are, but Come on in, water's fine.
And I should say that on occasion you provide some interesting columns to the Alaska Standard as well.
I try to do about one a week, depending on whether Fagan and I are yelling at each other.
That makes for great dinner talk. Well, Alex, it's been great to have you in studio. I appreciate you swinging by. We'll be back right after the break, kids. Don't go away.